6:30, we'll go ahead and get started with the Monday, April 9th board meeting of the East Bay Township Board. It's a regular meeting. It is our report meeting. We'll call the meeting to order and start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and we'll start with the roll call attendance.
Walters.
Present.
Merrill.
Here.
Forte.
Here.
Lyle.
Here.
Bartlett.
Yes.
Friend.
Here.
And it's noted that Henschel is absent and excused.
Okay. You have the agenda in front of you. You'll notice, again, as I mentioned, this is a report meeting of our new format that we're trying out in the year 2018. We had another meeting similar to this in January, and our next one will be in July. On tonight's agenda, you'll see we have some the consent calendar and then the reports in front of us. We have an engineering and accounting updates, the Grand Traverse County Road Commission. Leah is here for public access television. Community police officers are here and Grand Traverse Metro as well as East Bay EMS 9A. Does anybody have any changes or additions or anything from the agenda, or we're good to move forward? Okay. That's what we will do then. Does anybody have any conflicts of interest? Okay, seeing none, this is the time for public comment. If there's any public who would like to make a comment on anything under the sun, really, if you'd like to come up and state your name and address, so you're welcome to address the board. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to correspondence. You'll see in your packet you have a letter from East Bay Township to ACME regarding the U.S. 31 North Force Main that we approved last month. You have the mailing that was sent out to Canterbury and English Woods Special Assessment Districts that had an information letter on a neighborhood meeting that's happening this Thursday, as well as kind of an informational question from us is, you know, you've seen in the thing when people think that they'll be paying off their special assessment districts to try and give us a better number on the financing. Also added late last week, you got a mailer on a short-term rental seminar. In reports, there is a written report from the assessing department. Typically, they're on this agenda too, but excuse me, they were just here in, I think it was December or January, so they have a written report for you. With that, we'll move on to the consent calendar. And would you like to go over the consent calendar?
Sure. The purpose of the consent calendar is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one board motion without discussion. Any member of the board, staff, or the public may ask that any item on the consent calendar be removed from there and placed elsewhere on the agenda for full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. If any item is not removed from the consent calendar, the action noted in parentheses is adopted by a single board action adopting the consent calendar. This evening, board minutes from March 12, 2018, regular board meeting. In the general fund, check numbers 13699 through 13743 paid in the amount of $60,458.87. The emergency fund, check numbers 3777 through 3795, in the amount of $63,075.10. The receiving fund, check numbers 2546 through 2555, in the amount of $148,667.44. The escrow fund, check numbers 1537 through 1540, amount of $1,128.64. There were two payrolls, one dated March 4th, 2018 through March 17th. Check number 6154 through 6165 in the amount of $36,287.77, which included a $5,934.90 for payroll taxes and $955.82 for State of Michigan withholdings. And the payroll dated March 18th through March 31st, check number 6166 through 6172, the amount of $45,390.78, also included $7,554.15 for payroll tax and $1,204.59 for State of Michigan withholdings. Total payroll was $81,678.55, and total amount paid $355,008.60. And there were no budget adjustments. And items under H, other items, the 2018 Grand Traverse County Road Commission and East Bay Charter Township Agreement for Brine Application to Gravel Roads, Part-Time Seasonal Worker, Zoning Amendments 1-18 and 2-18, and Special Assessment District Bond Resolution.
Okay, thank you, Ann. For clarification, that bond resolution is 2018-04. And we have a couple, you know, brief typos that I want to correct. At the end, number one, the 2018 brine agreement, at the bottom, it says the motion that would be passed with the consent calendar. It says motion to approve or deny. So that would be a motion to approve. And then the same thing on number five, which is the special assessment district, the motion that's listed is motion to approve or deny. It would be a motion to approve. Let's see, we also have on that bond resolution on page four, there is a typo. And in number 11, the section, there are two numbers there, and they need to match, and they should both be the 481-429-90 for the Canterbury Woods. And I can provide that to the recording secretary. And Sue, you also had an adjustment on the minutes?
Correct. In the financial packet, you will see the minutes were amended. One of the citizens that spoke regarding the special assessment district, or that sent in a letter, was not in favor of the special assessment district. They had concerns, and so the minutes have been clarified to show that that was one in favor and one with concerns.
Okay, great. Thank you. Is there any item that any member of the board would like removed from the consent calendar?
I just want a clarification.
Sure.
I know that we approved seasonal help in the buildings and grounds. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that they will be vetted, and if they're driving a vehicle, that we go through the iChat so that we're sure that they are, in fact, eligible to be able to drive a municipal vehicle.
Yep.
So we usually talk about that if we have it as an agenda item, and I did not want that to be overlooked. So.
Yep, no. As it mentions in the agenda item, all of the processes from the personnel policy will be followed, and I
Perfect.
Think that might even be mentioned specifically in
okay.
there. I can't recall right now, but yes, absolutely. Okay, if there's nothing else. Okay, go ahead.
I just have two quick questions. I don't know if you want to pull
Mindy, can you put the microphone closer to you? Thank you.
Is that better?
I don't know. We'll see when we listen back to it.
On H1, the
brine agreement.
The brine agreement.
Mm-hmm.
In the last sentence of the description, it says it's $7.50 a mile, but in the chart it says $400 a mile. So I'm.
No, it's the increase is 1.91%.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
See, that was easy to solve. And then on H2, I had a concern about the wage that is being proposed.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to make sure that the wage being proposed, was it $12 to $13 an hour?
Correct.
I just want to make sure that we're not hiring them at a wage that exceeds our paramedics and our firefighters.
Well, Tim is here, so he would be able to answer that. But I think all of our paramedics are above that wage, yes.
Okay.
Yep. What we did with that was we took the agenda item and backed that down. We had looked at that rate back at the budget process and kind of backed that backwards. So.
Okay. That was my my concern right there.
Sure. Absolutely. Your point is well made, though, that paramedics are duly underpaid in general. Okay, is there any member of the public who would like anything removed from the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, is there a motion to approve the consent calendar as presented with those adjustments?
I would make that motion.
Okay. Is there support?
Support.
Okay, motion made by Bartlett, support by Walters. Ann, we'll do a roll call vote.
Bartlett?
Yes.
Walters?
Yes.
Lyle?
Yes.
Merrill?
Yes.
Corte?
Yes.
Brent?
Yes. Okay, thank you very much, especially with those couple changes and the quick questions. Appreciate the latitude in that. So we can move right into the reports. First, we have Wade Trim with Damien. Damien, if you want to just come on, you can stand at the podium or sit at the table, whatever makes you the most comfortable.
Good.
Okay, so you're a lot like Brian. He likes standing at the podium. So, Damien, why don't you kind of bring us up to date on some of the projects with East Bay?
Okay, sounds good. First one is the phosphate injection at the iron removal facility. That project, we've prepared it and we've sent it to the MDEQ for approval. At this point, we're waiting to hear from them. We haven't heard anything yet, and after they approve that, we're going to send that out for bids. So that's where we're injecting phosphate at the iron removal facility. There's an injection pump, a scale, some chemicals, and it's targeted to help reduce corrosion within a lot of the service leads that history is showing has been kind of an issue over the last couple years. Another project is the painting of the existing water storage tanks. As you know, the English Woods one was completed in the fall. The Cherry Ridge one is next, and that's to be started in May. We're not sure exactly when. It's going to be dependent on the weather, but we are in contact with the contractor, and that's what he's looking at. It was early May.
Have you noticed the water tower? Have you guys driven by the water tower in English Woods? They did
a nice job
on it. Have you had any feedback on that with you? Okay.
Are they going? You are going to notify the residents around there when they start, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll coordinate that with the DPW.
Yeah.
And Damien, I know that we did have a few residents complain about the early start time. Is that something that's going to be looked at again with the vendor to
the early start time of May?
No, time of day.
Actually, I think it had more to do with, because we were up against the winter weather,
right.
We allowed them to work on quiet things on Saturday and Sunday. So,
but I think they started at 7 a.m., and we did have quite a few vocal opposition to that 7 a.m.
It was, and I think even that was mostly on weekends too, which
probably
may not. Well,
that would affect more on a weekend than it would a weekday, I would expect.
We can take a look at that and the time we have with that. Again, we're not up against the weather like we were last time, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, I'll take a look at that. Okay, the third project is the US 31 Force Main Rehabilitation. We're going to be advertising that project later this week. We're going to have survey crews out tomorrow along US 31 surveying access points because the contractor is going to need to get in at about three or four locations along the main because they can only do about 700 feet in one shot. So we got to break it up into sections. So survey crew will be out there tomorrow. Waiting to hear back from the grant agency there. The township's going to hear back on that first. We won't hear, but you will, so waiting to hear from that. Let's see, fourth project, water reliability study. We do those, the DEQ likes to see those about every 5 years. We submitted that to the DEQ a couple months ago. That study had the new tank in it and the new water main. So, we haven't heard back from them yet, but nothing major there. The fifth project is the AMMO. That was the sewer and water extensions along Hammond to the AMMO storage facility. That project's done. The closeout documents were sent to the township and the DPW about a week and a half ago. So that's all wrapped up. And that's it.
Any questions for Damien? I know one thing I talked with Brian about this past week when I saw him was along the base of the water tower, actually both water towers, the one in English Woods and the one in Hammond. The one in Cherry Ridge is already buffered by trees, but the other two we're looking at putting in some evergreens around that baseline of the fenced area, kind of as a buffer. So that Brian's going to be, and Damien are going to be handling that for us too. So that'll probably come back to you because I have to see how much it is. So, all right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Damien.
Thanks, Damien.
Thank you.
Steve Kronovic. Did I get that right, Steve?
Yeah.
I'm getting that. Hopefully, I'm getting better at it.
I have a hard time pronouncing it sometimes.
My main name was Catullus, so, you know. No one knew how to spell it.
Thank you. I think I got on everybody's seats some of this information, and we'll kind of go through that in just a second. But just a little bit of a update. Last meeting, we just kind of got started on the process. So we did October and November's bank reconciliations when I came in January, kind of getting those caught up. At that January 8th meeting, I think. Since then, we've mainly worked on bank reconciliations, what I've worked on. So December through March is bank reconciliations. Just today, finished the March bank reconciliations, which, you know, we're 9 days into the new month. So that, I think that's pretty good. I mean, everything is clicking along. Tracy has a lot of that information ready, and Sue's getting a lot of the entries posted, and so I think that process, the bank reconciliation process, is in good shape. I know in your packets, Sue had included the February information because that was as of Thursday or whenever that information went out, that was the last month that had been reconciled, and that's kind of the thought process that we had gone through, was to provide to the board the most recent month that's been reconciled, just in case there's adjustments through the bank reconciliation process, and so that's why February was in your packets. But I'm giving you some of March, just since I went through that and just had a handful of mainly interest adjustments and so forth for this year or for this month. So I kind of will touch on that a little bit, but over the last quarter, had a lot of as we've been here, a lot of different meetings with supervisor, treasurer, and clerk related to various different kind of planning processes or answering questions, whether it be budgetary questions or how do we do this kind of questions, and how should we handle procedural type things that we've talked about over the last quarter. The last month, mainly audit prep has been a big push for the ladies, and I tried to help as much as I could. Because even though we have performed your audit in the past, as Tracy and I talked today, it's different to be on this side of the table and compared to that side of the table with doing the audit. So a lot went into getting ready and doing that. Then they started today. The auditors are in. They were, I don't know if they're still here, but
nope,
they were.
They left.
Okay. They were here and got a pretty good start, I think, and just a lot of that framework that they have to build, kind of the permanent file type information that they were working on, a lot of that today in the coding, and I just answered, you know, some questions for that and got some of the coding taken care of in relation to that. So what you have, if you recall, when we talked in January, kind of one of the things that we talked about was looking at the financial statements and kind of trying to understand the revenues, expenditure reports. So what I did and that you have there in front of you is March's revenue and expenditure reports. And I'll just kind of briefly touch on these, mainly the general fund. There's some information in some of the other funds that are in there. But if you recall, what we talked about is as you go through and you get a quarter done, well, theoretically, you should be about 25% of your revenues collected or your expenditures incurred, barring unforeseens or barring some unique things. Like as you look there in the general fund, really three items. You can see the 1, 2, and 3 that I pointed out there. Obviously, tax revenue gets collected in the early in the year, so you can see 98% of your tax revenue has come in. So that's a good thing. And to look at the other revenues there, you see state shared revenues at about 17%. The state pays that every other month, so you get payments in February, April, June, August, October and December. So you've gotten one of those payments, so 1/6 is 17%. So that's right on track. It's not 25, but that's the reason it's not 25 is that it's 1/6 of those dollars coming in. And then the other larger revenue there is cable franchise fee revenue. And actually what that is, once the audit is done, that money was recorded back into 2017. It was collected in 2018, but it's related to 2017. So that was through the audit prep process. We accrued that entry back. But I didn't want to change that until the auditors got done and just, you know, in case they had, you know, some... That entry will, or that amount will be reversed out and that revenue will go to zero because you collect that, usually collected in December or shortly after, for the prior year. So that those are kind of the three larger revenue items there to look at. Then the various expenditures, I mean, you can look through those. I've kind of labeled, you know, a few of those. I was looking at those usually within, 5% of, you know, if you talk about 25%, if you're within 5% of that is kind of the rule of thumb that I was using. And if it wasn't, I looked at that to say, and I think you as a board should probably do the same thing to say, okay, we're a quarter way through the year. Why haven't we expended, you know, as you look under township board, you know, we've only spent 10% of our of the budget, you know, and mainly you can see some of those areas that I highlighted, legal fees and metro services and the audit. Obviously, the audit hadn't happened as of March, so you hadn't incurred costs there. Thankfully, legal fees are down, so you didn't have a lot of costs there. So that's kind of the main reasons that's at that's at 10%. And as you scan through those and kind of learn the revenue and expenditure report, I think it'll make sense to you. As you see, you know, supervisor, that's 20%. So I just, you know, that's pretty close to the 25. As you go through, you see elections. We haven't had an election yet, so we don't have hardly any cost. Assessor, they bill on a quarterly basis, and so your January, February, March quarter will be billed in April, is my understanding. So that's why there's no cost there, you know, reflected. Clerk, 22%. So you're right, you know, within that 25%. Board of Review, 40%. Well, I think that's three times a year. So you've had one, which was in March. So, you know, so again, that kind of thing would be my thought as you look through this and as you scan through Treasurer's Office, again, right kind of in that 20 to 25% range. Township Hall on page 3, they're quite a bit lower there, and as you can see, you had budgeted a significant amount of capital outlay. A lot of that hasn't been done, so that kind of skews things as you look at those. But that logic would be what you'd want to look at on a quarterly basis, and what I, you know, will plan to do on a quarterly basis. Tracy and I sat down briefly this afternoon and kind of went through those to say, you know, why haven't, you know, if you go over to page 4, you see under road projects and street projects about, you know, the F and G. Well, obviously it's winter, so you didn't do a lot of that work as far as road projects and street lights. You know, the utilities are lower, which is a, you know, good thing for the various different lights throughout the township. And so a lot of those things, as you see those, you as a board will know probably better than I even to say, oh, well, we haven't done the trail study hasn't been conducted yet, probably, I assume. That's why there's no cost there. So that, in you know, as far as the financial side of it, would be what I would be looking at as a board to see where, you know, where our costs are, where we've expended more than what we had budgeted and where we have expended less, and if we have more or less, why, you know, and you know, some of them as you go through, you know, make a lot of sense. As you go over to page 5, you know, the Parks Commission hasn't spent a whole lot. Well, I mean, there's not a lot going on in the parks in the middle of the winter, you know, and so you don't have a lot of costs. You've got, you know, various different things that you plan to do in 2018, but those just haven't gotten going, so to speak, in 2018. So that, you know, that is kind of just, really, I just kind of wanted to point you to some of those things and highlight some of those things. As you can see there, you know, the at the bottom of the page on page 5 is the health savings reimbursement amount, $43,000 budgeted. That's paid in December, so you won't pay that till the end of the year. So, again, that's kind of the logic there of you've got an amount budgeted, why haven't we spent a quarter of that? Well, it's kind of a one-time thing. I think if you look in here, there's insurance costs, you pay insurance once a year for, you know, liability and property and so forth. So that's why you may have those fluctuations. So that's what I would look at as a, you know, as a board. I would you know, scan through those, and then if there were other questions, obviously, you know, Tracy or Sue would be able to, you know, be able to answer a lot of those if I didn't touch on them today. But that's kind of, there's usually a logical reason for that you haven't expended the particular dollars. And that was the general fund, and then there's the other three funds that are included in the information too, are pages 7, 8, and 9, and they get into the to Metro, into police, and into ambulance. And as you can see, those are again pretty logical when you start to look at them. They're pretty much, you know, right on the police fund. Is page 8. Obviously, property taxes again have been significant. You're at 24% of the dollars expended, so you're pretty much spot on as far as the police fund, ambulance. Same way, property taxes is the most significant revenues there on page 9. So you've collected 85% of your revenues, and you're at almost 23% as far as expenditure. So again, pretty much spot on as far as expenditures. Metro is treated a little bit different. Back to page 7, those dollars are dispersed directly out of your property tax fund to Metro. So there's an entry that needs to be made. Tracy and I talked about that today, and recording, basically recording that within the 206 fund, because right now a check comes out of your property tax fund and goes directly to Metro, so it just needs to be recorded in that 206 fund. So that's a lot of information, I know, but I know you got a lot on your agenda. But that's the kind of stuff that I hope to, you know, to do on a monthly basis, you know, for my purposes and probably for Beth and Sue and Tracy, and then as a quarterly basis come to the full board to kind of go through that information with you, so you can begin to learn and kind of see what I would suggest is the important part to look at as far as revenues and expenditures in the funds. And then, so as far as the next quarter, what the hope or what the plan is, kind of the expectation, obviously finish the audit. They hope to be done, I think, Wednesday or Thursday of this week. But obviously there'll be an issuance of the financials, and we'll review them and get those back to them for finalization. The state of Michigan is changed the state chart of accounts. I want to look through your chart of accounts to see what there may be in changes that need to happen. I don't think we need to get into the minutia of a lot of changes, but if there's some substantial changes, we'll want to reclassify and recode some of the chart of accounts, and that should be pretty straightforward. I know BSNA has probably put some. I'm sure you probably.
Yep, they've got a spreadsheet that I'm working on.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so good. So you and I can get together maybe on that. And I know there's a couple things that I could see that. You know, so we'll want to. That'll be one of the things for this next quarter, I think, that we can look at. And then, obviously, just being a resource for you as a board, and then looking at the systems review, whether it's receipts or disbursements, and journal entry process. I know I've got piles of journal entries on my desk I haven't gone through, and so we kind of need to set a specific process of related to journal entries. And I know the ladies have a process, but just kind of wanted to get some formalization of that and talk more with them to make sure we're on that. Project accounting, I know, is something Beth has talked about, and so we kind of want to look at BSNA and how we can, you know, utilize that to make sure that we're accounting for all the dollars and on the various different projects. As you have a lot of projects going on, a lot of things going on, to be able to track every dollar, to be able to say this project cost X, and you can do that within the general ledger, and I think that'll be a helpful tool. So that's something I want to look at for the next quarter, hopefully. So I know it's a lot of information, but I don't know if there's any specific questions on that or just in general.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, water and sewer. Mm-hmm. I don't see that. Is that something that you're going to bring to us?
And I looked at that today, and I didn't get far enough into it to be able to give it to, you know, and because this was more kind of budget to actual, where you adopt budgets for those funds, but they're treated like a business. So I didn't get into those specifically, just kind of ran out of time with the auditors being here today, so I apologize for that. But I can get that to you and even produce it, you know, and maybe if I'm here on Wednesday, which I think I will be, that could be maybe something that could go out to the board supplementary.
You've got them for February.
Yes.
In the board packet.
So, yep. Yeah. But I can do the same thing.
I noticed that, and I don't know if it was the one we got in our packet, it doesn't show any benefit sold this year.
No.
We haven't sold any?
We don't normally do those adjustments at every time that we get a payment every month. So, no, I haven't done any of those adjustments yet.
Did you have another question? I was just going to ask.
No, that's all.
Okay, great. I know the auditor sent me an email this afternoon that said some of you will be getting, and you can expect that. Just it's normal through the audit process. Randomized, you know, some they pick people in certain offices, and then they also do a random. They'll contact some employees, some board members, and it's just kind of a questionnaire, standard and typical for audit. So if you get anything from Richard, you can, you know that that's just kind of par for the course. Answer
yep.
it and send it
yes.
on back to him. So
yeah, just kind of standard inquiries. Yeah.
Okay. Well, are there any other questions for Steve?
Do you know, does the ambulance also, are they in that rotation? Does Richard have their emails too?
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
Well, I don't know if he has their, you know, I didn't even ask him if he had the employee email, so I'll check with him.
Yeah, we just might want to confirm that. That way we know we're all on the same page.
Thank you
Great.
So much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
Jim Cook, Grand Traverse County Road Commission, is up next. Jim was just recently at a TTCI meeting and talked about some of the projects, and I know you're going to really enjoy hearing about some of them and the additional funds that you guys received.
That's all good news. Jim Cook, Grand Traverse County Road Commission. So I'm here for our first meeting this year, right, mm-hmm. to talk about what's going on at the Road Commission. So, well, the big news is our first project got delayed a week because of the weather. So evidently, winter is not quite done with us, but I'm so. But this is going to be a big year for us. We have $14 million in projects planned for this year. Last year, we had $10 million. Of that $14 million, approximately $3.5 million is going to be on the South Airport Road project, which is from a couple parts to it. There's one part. So the main part is from US 31 to Vets Drive, and that's a total reconstruction of all five lanes. And then we're also going to create a new lane, an additional lane along Best Buy on the other side of 31. So mm-hmm. so right now we have two lanes that cross 31, but they merge into one lane on the other side. So we're going to take that out to two lanes, and it's not going to be two lanes all the way out, but once you get past Best Buy, then you'll merge into. But that'll help us convey a little more traffic, because we have two lanes going left, we have two lanes going straight, and we have one lane going right, and there's a bottleneck right there in the intersection. So that's going to help a lot, and that's scheduled to start this coming Monday on the 16th. General fund projects, we have. You have a list. You have a copy of the list, but do you want me to go through them? Sure. Do not want me to go through.
Go right. Whatever.
Okay. Hey.
We're particularly interested in the East Bay ones, but
I know. So, of special interest, of course, are the partnership projects, and again, the special assessment projects. We really appreciate your participation because, you know, that, you know, SADs, special assessments, are really the best option we have currently available to fix subdivision roads. And of course, subdivision roads are the worst. They are the lowest rated roads throughout the county consistently. Mm-hmm. And it's because they're so old, and they were all built with what they called triple seals. So they were old. They were chip seal projects. So they were, to me, it's sort of like, it's just one layer of chip after another. So they usually start out with three layers. And when asphalt was cheap in the 60s and the 70s, on an annual basis, every couple of years, they would put another layer out there. So we have chip seal, we have triple seal projects or subdivision roads where, and you'll see them because they're the roads where there are chunks of asphalt in people's yards, and it's because they're so brittle, and they literally are 5 inches thick, 8-9 inches thick, and when they break up, they're just big rocks, and they end up in people's yards. So. Unfortunately, we have 200 subdivisions in the county, and because we're focusing on corridors, you know, we are not going to get to subdivisions for quite some time. I mean, probably 10 years from now before we'd ever start a subdivision project. So the SAD is really the best option we have currently available with the funding. So we appreciate that, and those are going to be crush and shapes. So basically we won't call them a total reconstruct because total reconstructs are what we're going to do on South Airport Road, where we actually take out all of the sub bays and we put down sand, gravel, and a new road. Crush and shape is we actually put gravel on top of the existing pavement and then we grind it all up because the base is generally good, and then we pave it. So it's a new road. It's just we're using the existing base. As far as just talking about partnership projects, we have the Castle Road Drainage District project, and that is scheduled to bid in July. That's not our project. That's actually the Drain Commissioner's project. And what that is it's a somewhere between, I haven't seen a final cost estimate, but it's somewhere between $3 and $5 million. And what they're doing is they're enlarging the district, and the district includes all of that industrial property along Cass Road, but it also goes all the way out to the mall. So it goes out to the mall and takes up a big residential area. And so because they're enlarging the district, they're going to need a lot more infrastructure, a lot more pipes, a lot larger pipes, and they're going to run a mainline storm sewer down the center of Cass Road. So the road commission is assessed just like any other property owner in the district. So we'll pay our fair share for being part of that project and for that benefit, the basic benefit, they call it basic benefit, which is the capacity of that storm sewer, we pay our fair share, plus we're going to pay our fair share on the road replacement because they're going to tear out our road when they put this mainline storm sewer down the middle of it. But as a supplemental benefit, by statute, we can ask to have a supplemental benefit, which is where we pay 100%. And so we're going to pay 100% for a center turn lane, basically from South Airport Road out to almost to Hartman Road. So that'll help those industrial sites and commercial sites with just access a little better. We're also doing a reconstruction in Heritage Estates with Garfield Township, and that's actually being combined with a water main project that they're going to be doing. Down in Grant Township, we're doing a wedge and a chip seal project on Ramsey Road. Crescent Shores, that's in Long Lake Township, that one is on hold right now. So we're not sure that the township is going to move forward with that project for this year. Bancroft Road, that's down in Mayfield. And again, this happens to be a 50-50 partnership where we actually paved a gravel road a few years back. And we actually did it in a couple of different phases over a two-year period, and now we're going to actually go through and we're actually going to do an overlay over the entire road. So that's quite a big project, especially for that part of the county. We have about I want to say we have about $2 million in chip seal projects, and there's a couple segments on West Silver Lake, East Silver Lake, Hammond Road from 4 Mile Road to High Lake Road. That'll be a chip seal project. North Long Lake Road, there's a couple of segments there. West Long Lake Road, Peninsula Drive, we're doing the very northern part of Peninsula Drive, which is the last segment of Peninsula Drive that we've been working on for about the last 3 or 4 years. Cass Road, we're going to do a chip seal from basically the new bridge that we installed. We're going to do that all the way around to Hartman Road. Elk Lake Road from M72 to Angel Road. 3 Mile Road from Smith Road to Hammond Road. And then 4 Mile Road, North Arbutus Lake Road to Potter Road. And then, under state and federal funded projects, we have 3 Mile Road from Garfield Road. It goes northerly 2 miles to about 1,300 feet short of Smith Road. And then Beth had mentioned extra funds. So about maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, we were notified by our state rep and our senator, Wayne Schmidt, that the state was looking at... They found some additional funds in the general fund, and Governor Snyder was very insistent that, you know, he made a pledge to invest in infrastructure, and so if there was extra money, he wanted it to go to improving roads. So they basically said, hey, do you have a need for another? Well, the total amount was $175 million, and so our share is almost $800,000. And so they called and said, do you have any need for another $800,000? And we said, absolutely. And so what we did is we have shelf-ready projects. We have projects just sitting there waiting in case we get some extra funding. And we've actually, over the last almost 6 years, we've gotten some surprise additional funding in four of those years. So that's really good news. So with that, we are going to do a wedge and chip seal on Potter Road from 3 Mile to 4 Mile. It's not enough money to do everything we want, but we're gonna wedge Potter Road from Garfield to 3 Mile. That's going to help a lot with the road. And then what it does is it sets us up as prep for a chip seal next year. So our goal is to chip seal Garfield to 3 Mile next year. But again, putting that wedge down. Now this is more significant than an overlay. An overlay is, you know, inch and a half of an asphalt. This will be, we're going to be correcting the profile of the road. So we're going to restore the profile of the road. It could vary anywhere from 3 to 6 inches thick. And so most people are going to call. They're going to call and they're going to be excited that we're putting in a new road. And it'll look like a new road. It'll just be better once we get the chip seal on it. Next year, Silver Pines Road, same thing. We're gonna wedge that. High Lake Road, we're gonna wedge and we're gonna chip seal that, and then also Long Lake Road from Cedar Run to the city limits. That one's all set. We just need to chip seal it. So we're gonna be chip sealing that road this year. So again, $14 million in projects, counting the extra $800,000, and. And then today we had a meeting today, part of the Pell process, which is the environmental linkages.
Was I supposed to remember that acronym?
I was hoping you would. I always
looking
forget.
At you pretty intently.
But basically,
I didn't know there was a quiz on it.
it's a process that we go through. And plan projects. It's a process that was adopted by the Federal Highway Administration. It's a nice process. If anybody was involved in the Division Street, they did a study. MDOT did, and we went through the Pell process. So it's a series of meetings where you meet with stakeholders, you meet with local agencies, and then you meet with the public, and you get input. And this is a 12 to 14 month process. We hired a consultant that at the end of 12 to 14 months, we're going to go through this process. We're going to get lots of input. It's very transparent. And they're going to come back with, you know, here's a list of, you know, it's based on east-west mobility, you know, and so if you talk to anybody in the public, we always get complaints about traffic on South Airport Road, and there's always ideas on widening South Airport Road and doing things to Keystone, and so we just said we're going to hire, we've already been through the Hartman-Hammond Bridge, and they've been through all kinds of studies in the past, and we just said, hey, we want to go through, we're going to start over, we're going to do a process where the public is engaged, it's very transparent, and our consultant's going to come back to us in 12 to 14 months and say, if your goal is east-west mobility and you need to improve, you know, traffic, here are all the options that we would recommend. So they're going to identify options, they're going to have recommendations, and those recommendations are, you know, I expect are going to range from small incremental improvements, such as improvements to intersections, maybe it has something to do with our traffic signals and things like that. It could be widening Keystone or something like that, or it could be a major project, and maybe that's widening Keystone, maybe that's the major project, but in 12 to 14 months, our board's very committed to, we need an answer, and then we're going to do something, because we're not going to, you know, we don't want this to be a waste as other studies have been in the past. Any questions?
There was the meeting on that today, and they had invited, what was the meeting today? It was the group, was local?
Local agencies, and what we did is we invited supervisors and at least somebody from your planning commission, and it's a time commitment, because we're asking, there's going to be a series of five meetings for the stakeholders, there's five meetings for the local agencies, and there's five meetings with the public, and so it's a 12 to 14 month process. I would guess meetings are about 2 months apart, so probably 10 months worth of meetings starting today. But like we've seen in the past, you know, the people who are in favor of things, you know, sort of go, well, what's the big deal? And they don't come out and show their support. And what you get is you get a lot of people who are opposed to things, and they're the ones that come out in full force to make sure that everybody knows that they're opposed. And so it's very, very important that our townships are involved, the county, planning commissions, and the public, anybody that's in favor of the project. I mean, we want to hear from everybody, but where I see the real deficit is when it comes to people that are in favor and support of a project. We got to get those people out. Because we're trying to solve a problem, and we can't solve the problem if we don't hear from everybody. So
a couple of things I wanted to let you guys know about it is I went today. Rick Brown is going, and Leslie Couturier is going. And I'm glad you clarified the number of meetings, because we agreed today to a commitment of 12 to 14 months, not knowing how many meetings that exactly was. So it's good to know that. But, you know, one of the things they spent probably, I would say, all total, it was from 1 to 3:30 today, probably 45 minutes or so, going through kind of the process that they're talking about and what they're gathering now, what they're trying to reach, and it's not a construed end, do you know what I'm saying? It's they're actually trying to define what the issue is right now. And so it was pretty interesting. And part of the question, then there was a whole process we spent of time talking with another jurisdiction that was next to us about east-west or corridors in our area and so forth. But one of the things, the questions that was asked is, you know, what do we bring to the table? And Rick and Leslie and I, when we were talking in our group, said one of the things we bring to the table is just a commitment to continue to attend these meetings and to go and be an engaged partner in their process. Because if you don't do that, you go to the one meeting and then you don't go to the others, you know, you really aren't informed. And to try to get that information as this process feeds out information, and they talked about that today, how will they communicate to us to get that to you guys? So I was going to go back and take a look at what they sent us for this meeting to send on to you guys, mm-hmm. So there's an explanation there. And would you just touch on, I think at the end of that meeting they had asked about a resolution. I didn't read all the way through it yet. It was like three pages, and they were basically asking for support of the process, I think.
Yeah, it was I think it was a memorandum of understanding,
right.
Or maybe it was a, it was
That's
something
right.
like that.
It was.
And right. and basically, the consultant would like to get townships and partners to say, yeah, we support this. And so I wasn't clear if they want to pass a resolution or if you're supposed to adopt it. Or so we'll know in the future. How that's going to shake out, but yeah, I think it's really just public showing your public support that you're engaged. You want to engage in the process and go through the process.
So you had a question for
okay. Just briefly.
Mm-hmm.
Write down August 7th. That is a primary election day. Mm-hmm. I'm thrilled at the list of roads for East Bay, but both 3 Mile Road between Smith and Hammond and High Lake Road. House our voting precincts. So if we cannot have road work on those two sections on that day, that will create less stress for our voters and our precinct workers.
I will talk to our engineering department.
I mean, I know it's a huge thing, but
I haven't seen the schedule on those projects, but my guess is that we're going to start with the SADs next week. That's the plan.
Okay.
South Airport. We're also doing a project on Logan's Landing. We're going to hold off until after the 4th of July just because we don't want to tear up all of South Airport Road. And the segment by the mall, that's going to be done. It's going to start here shortly, and it's going to be done well before the 4th of July. So our goal is to have that area buttoned up before Cherry Festival. And then we'll wait till after Cherry Festival to start Logan's Landing. And Logan's Landing is basically we're going to convert that into what I would call a glorified or maybe a high-tech Michigan left turn. So if you've ever been out on Big Beaver Road in Southfield, that's the only other one in the state. And basically we're going to leave the traffic signal there, but we're going to shut it off. And we'll be able to use it in case of emergencies or something like that. But and eventually maybe it'll go away totally. But that will help the traffic because so many people get stuck at Logan's Landing because that's the one light that doesn't communicate with all the other lights on South Airport Road. So it doesn't really care about what's going on with traffic or other lights. It just stops people. So we're going to take that out. And again, what we're going to have is we're going to have two lanes that will turn. So you'll go down, you'll go past, say, Verizon, you'll go past, and you'll have two lanes that turn and go back the other way so you can get into Verizon. So.
Jim, do you have, on the projects that we have here in East Bay, do you have ideas of the timing on some of those past the SADs and so forth, or when would we be able to get an idea when those would be occurring?
You're talking about the
so High Lake Road you mentioned and the Potter Road and
4 Mile, 3 Mile,
right?
Yeah.
Hammond.
Well, right now the contractors are giving us schedules, and again, they've been focusing on South Airport Road, get that one done, and get the SAD started.
It has so much to do with weather.
And
right.
Yeah. So, but we'll have a schedule probably within the next month or so of almost all the projects for the summer, and so we'll have a better feel. Some of it has to do with, you know, which contractor has which projects, and then while they're over in an area, you know, it makes sense that they would.
How many they can group together with those same asphalt combinations.
Yeah.
Okay. On High Lake Road, you mentioned a wedge and chip seal.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of people have mentioned to me the lack of shoulders in that area. Is that any topic for discussion?
Yeah,
or
we won't be paving it, but what we'll do is whenever we wedge, we change the profile of the road, and we also raise the edges of the road up. So we'll be out there reconstructing shoulders. So
okay,
it'll be better than it is now.
Okay. And then I just quick question on clarification. You mentioned Potter Road, it's divided into two segments, 3 to 4 Mile and then Garfield to 3 Mile.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Garfield to 3 Mile was wedging and then chip sealing the following year.
Mm-hmm.
The 3 Mile to 4 Mile, is that wedge and chip seal in the same year?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. Any other questions for Jim?
And the one last thing I'll tell you is I did remember planning and environmental linkages. So that's what it stands for.
Okay.
And the nice thing about it is this is kind of, it's an expensive and long, drawn-out process. But the nice thing about it is if we do any major projects, so say we were to widen Keystone Road and we'll have to put in a bridge because they're not going to let us do tubes or wider tubes under Keystone. So if we get into any kind of project like that, you would have to do, we would have to do environmental permitting. And so when you do the environmental permitting, when you go through the process, you have to show that you've been through the process. If you didn't do it already, you would be doing it in the future. So that's why permitting takes 5 or 6 years to get through. So the stuff that we're doing today will actually shorten up that permitting process in the future, depending on what projects unfold. But so even though it's expensive and time consuming, it's required by the permitting process, and so I think we'll be ahead, and in 12 to 14 months we're going to know what we're doing. And the nice thing about it is our consultant is going to come to us because what we asked for was, as a scope of services, was tell us what the best options are, tell us how much it'll cost, and then tell us where we're going to get the money. So so they're going to come back with some ideas on different types of grants and things like that we can maybe consider.
And Jim, we just want to convey to you again, I know I said something to you the other day when I saw you at the MTA luncheon, but I know all of us feel this way. We're really happy to work on that partnership, SAD, with the Road Commission, especially at the end, appreciative of the change in percentage for English Woods and everything you did to try and help keep that project moving forward. So,
we really appreciate it, and we recognize the value of having these partnership projects, and so anything we can do to make it go, okay, is good for us.
And your staff has been great to work with.
Yep.
Thank you.
Very, very.
Jim Johnson and Joe Slinicky have been terrific to work with.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
So next on the agenda, we have Leah and we have Matt Kern here. How are you tonight, Matt?
What was that?
How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good.
Have to get this set up. I think this powered off.
It's still green.
Supposed to know video equipment. Projectors are the hardest video equipment to work with.
How about if you just touch the mouse on your computer? Wake up.
We need to turn that.
It's waking up.
Is that better?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for inviting me here tonight to talk about Up North Media Center. I'll try and, this is our number one complaint, is that people don't talk into the mic, so I'll try to talk into the mic. But my name is Matthew Kern. I'm the station manager at Up North Media Center. I've been with Leah and the Media Center since last January, since 2017, but I became the station manager in December. I'm from Traverse City. I grew up in the neighborhood right around East Bay Park, and I went to middle school right across the street from here, so I know this area really well, and this area means a lot to me. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to work for the Media Center, was because it's this region that makes the Media Center so special, and the Media Center's focus is to highlight the uniqueness and the vibrancy of our region. And the Media Center is an incredible story of a partnership between 4 jurisdictions, as you know, and a nonprofit organization that I work for. Up here you can see The logo on the bottom left is our parent organization, the Land Information Access Association, and they provide us with housing and with tech support and with a place, a studio space and accounting services and all that. And then underneath LEIA, we operate two main services, which are government TV and Up North TV, which is the public access station. So government TV, you can see the cameras in here. These are all part of the government TV broadcast system, and we do the government meetings for the four jurisdictions in the Traverse City area that are our participating jurisdictions. So there's the City of Traverse City, East Bay Charter Township, Elmwood Charter Township, Garfield Charter Township, and then we also do the meetings for Grand Traverse County, and those are done at the governmental center downtown. And Grand Traverse County can't collect PEG fees as a county. It's only something that townships can do. So Grand Traverse County then pays into the service. So they pay to have the service of their meetings being broadcasted. And you can see we have a pretty large viewing area. It's one of the largest. It's the largest viewing area for a public access station in the state. And it's generally large when we talk to people from the Alliance for Community Media. People are really surprised at how much of a geographical area we cover. In some of some bigger states like Texas and Alaska, sometimes they'll be a larger geographical area, but it's very seldom is it as many counties as we cover. And then in red there, you can see those are the four participating jurisdictions down in the centered around Traverse City. And these four jurisdictions provide us with funding, and you also provide us with oversight. And so for government access, or government TV channel 191, we have a government advisory committee that we meet with on a regular basis, a couple times a year. And that body is made up of the clerks from the various jurisdictions. And so we meet with them and we discuss and set policies. We ask any questions we have about improvements to service, things like that. And that's the committee that oversees just the government access portion or the government TV portion. And then we also have a citizen advisory committee, which is volunteer-based, and it's made up of anyone in the region that wants to be involved in helping the media center find direction. So from that group of people, we set our policies, our standards, the norms under which we operate, and the different procedures and policies that govern the type of content that we put on our channel, or the types of policies for people submitting media. For instance, people that don't live in the participating jurisdictions can submit media to us, but they have to pay a fee, and that fee was set by the Citizen Advisory Committee. And then that was something that was presented to the townships, and then the townships agreed to that policy. So that's who we consult with whenever we have any questions. Those are the two committees we consult with whenever we have questions about the channel in general. And then we also, to make it even more complex, we also go through the board of directors for our parent organization, LEIA. They also provide us with some direction, and they also help with our relationship internally with our parent organization. And so the four jurisdictions, the City of Traverse City, East Bay Township, Elmwood Township, and Garfield Township, they all provide us, or you all provide us, with our funding. And that funding is split into two main categories: franchise fees and then capital fees, or PEG fees, which PEG stands for Public Education and Government. And these fees are collected based around a federal legislation that was passed in the 1970s to provide public access. Essentially, the cable companies pay essentially a rent in order to run the cable lines down the public right-of-ways. And then those fees are collected by the townships, the jurisdictions, and those can be used to fund public access to government, to education programming. And so a portion of these fees are used for capital expenditures, and then another portion are used for operating funds for the TV services for both the channels, the government channel and the public access channel. So both of our channels can be watched on TV on channel 189 for the public access channel, 191 for the government TV, and they can also be watched on our website at upnorthmedia.org. And on there you can go to Watch It Now, which is a service that basically mirrors our cable cast, so you can watch it on your laptop, your phone, and it has a log that goes back 3 months, so you can look at programming on demand. So people can look at government meetings. If you go on there, you go to government TV at the top, and then you can select the jurisdiction that you want to review a meeting for, and you can then see meetings a few months back. And that's one of the services we provide for government TV. It's the archiving of meetings. We also record all of the meetings. We manage all of the labor, all of the contractors that come out to film these meetings, like Bob Chauvin in the back here. We also maintain the equipment. When there are technical issues, we try our best to deal with them as quickly as we can. We also maintain a software called Meeting Review, which allows it's another service added on top of watching the meetings on our website. Essentially, people can click on the part of the agenda that they want to jump to, and it'll take them right to that portion of the video. So that's another service that we offer through our website. And then we have a breakdown here of, on the left, the pie chart is just a breakdown of the total hours of programming for the fiscal year 2016. And you can see in the purple down at the bottom, or the light purple, East Bay Charter Township makes up a total of 407 hours of total programming meetings here. So that's 15% of our total programming. And then on the right, the table shows page views for our website, and Garfield Township has 391. But then also at the top, Government TV Watch It is all, that's the mirror of our cable cast, so that also contains some East Bay Township meetings, the same amount that would be on our cable channel. So some of the hours for East Bay Township are contained in that one. Oh, I think I said 391. I mixed it up with Garfield. But so you can see there's a substantial amount of people that watch the meetings in this area. So that is the breakdown for the government access channel. But we also have our second channel, which is the public access channel. And anyone can submit media to this channel if they live in the viewing area. So anyone pretty much from the bridge down to Manistee can submit media to us. If they don't live in a participating jurisdiction, they have to pay a small fee in order to have the service, because their townships aren't paying into the service. And what we do is we provide all the resources that one would need in order to do a video production, and then all of the training to use those resources, the equipment, the editing stations. Let's see if I can get this PowerPoint working again. It starts back at the beginning. So we provide all the cameras, all the microphones. Anyone from the public that takes a training with us can come and check out equipment for free. They can go out and film different public events. They can make any video that they like, as long as the content is appropriate for public viewing. And so we host trainings and classes generally every month. Sometimes it's a little bit slower in the summer, but we we try and train anyone in the public that is interested in video skills. We try and train them and provide them with all the resources they would need in order to make the videos that they want. And we have a very, I don't know why this is cutting in and out, but we have a strong focus on local content, and we cover a lot of local events. We cover the Cherry Festival. We cover music events all around the region in the summer. We cover the film festival panels for the Traverse City Film Festival. Let's see if I can get this PowerPoint back up. And then we also go out on shoots with volunteers to help them, walk them through. When they're new to it, we'll walk them through how to use the equipment so that they can film the events they want to film, or any content really that they want to film. So we also then take any of that media that people produce. We do what's called ingesting the media, which is bringing it into our system, converting it if necessary, and then we put it up on our channel and schedule it for viewing. And we allow people to do series and have time slots on the same day if they're a regular producer. And then we work with the volunteers in order to ensure that they are able to keep on producing the media and have all the resources necessary to do that. We have a studio at our main office where people can come in and have talk shows, discussions on camera, and we'll run the cameras for them if they provide the content. And then they have to then do the editing on their programs and stuff like that. But we also provide a computer lab with video editing software and everything necessary for people to finalize their video projects. And so here's a breakdown of what our programming looks like for the public access channel. And you can see events dominate the pie chart, and that's because events are generally what people choose to cover the most of, because it gives the most content for the least amount of camera work, really. Because a lot of it is they'll set up a camera, film a musical event or a presentation. A lot of them are presentations at the Boardman River Nature Center, things at City Opera House, at the State Theater when there are special events around town. At Tattle's main location on Woodmere, there's equipment there that they allow us to use that's very similar to the equipment we have at our studio. So people get trained at our studio and they can go over to the library and use their equipment as well. Which is essentially a meeting room with cameras installed like this and a video switcher in the back. But we also cover different special events around the area. When the DEQ comes to present in Traverse City, or the DNR, we'll cover those events, town hall events, things like that. And last year, we had 68 different people come in and check out equipment on a regular basis. We had 87 uses of the studio space for people doing talk shows and things like that. We had just over 2,500 website visits per month. And our biggest event for views by far was the Cherry Royale Parade last summer. And we broadcasted that live on our channel and on Facebook, and we got a lot of interactions on Facebook. And then we also taught 8 field producer classes, so we were almost able to get one a month. We're going to try for that this year, to try and get one field producer training per month, and we had 30 students last year. But we also had a lot of people coming that are, you know, recurring users, people coming in on a regular basis to use the facilities. And as I said earlier, we covered a couple different special projects or special events last year. We did the Cherry Festival Parade. We actually did all 3 of the parades, but we only went live for the Cherry Royale Parade. Covered the Film Festival Awards Ceremony and the panels. We covered all of the National Writers Series events at the City Opera House. We did the Rotary Show, and Building Bridges with Music is the MLK Day celebration that happens every January. We always cover that. And then we do candidate forums through the Chamber of Commerce organizes forums where candidates running for local elections come into our studios and basically answer questions posed from the that the public poses. And then we air those on our channel and also put them up on YouTube for people to see. Then Picnic at the Opera is our big signature production that happens in February, and that's the Michigan's only live variety show. And we organize a variety show with poetry, music, dance, and we live broadcast that every Wednesday afternoon in February. So a breakdown of our budget, as you can see here. We have on the left our overall funding, and then underneath the table we broke out the numbers for East Bay Township, what East Bay Township puts in for both the franchise fees and the capital fees. And the capital fees are also the PEG fees, or they're known as the PEG fees. And those are only to be used for capital expenditures. The other category, a lot of that is funds that are coming in and then going out, like all of our contractor fees are classified under other, where the townships are paying the contractor fees, and then every time this thing gets bumped,
gets stayed.
And then they go back out. And then in kind are donations from the parent organization. And then you can see our overall expenses here. And all of these numbers, there's more detail behind all these numbers, obviously, and a lot of that can be found in the board packet, in the annual report, the full annual report. That was in the board packet, I think February 12th it was in the board packet for this year. And then
it's in this one too.
Okay. And then you can see the funds remaining down there for both capital expenses and operations. So the things that we have on our horizon for government TV are really trying to maintain excellent service. We want to ensure that we find any issues that might turn into technical problems and resolve them before anything happens. But then we also want to improve our response time for when there are technical issues, because some are inevitable, especially with having, you know, people walking around the rooms and cables exposed and things like that. We really want to ensure that we have the same hardware in all of the jurisdictions, or at least as close as we can get to the same hardware. That's one thing that's made it a little bit difficult for our contractors, is that some of the systems have been kind of hodgepodge and patched together, and we're going through a process of switching out different components to make the systems more consistent with each other, so that it's easier for us to repair them, so we're more familiar with the equipment, and so that contractors can jump around from different jurisdictions. Because right now, the system we have at the governmental center in Traverse City is completely different than any of the other systems as far as the user interface and things like that. So it's difficult for those contractors to move to any other jurisdiction. We want to also ensure that meeting review works on all devices. Now that there are more and more devices that people are looking at video content on, especially smartphones, it's really difficult to ensure that all devices are supported, and we're trying to make sure that all brands of phones and all web browsers and all tablets, things like that, work fluently with the meeting review function, where, and that again, that's the function where you can click on the part of the agenda that you want to jump to in the video. And then for Up North TV, for the public access station, we've gotten a lot of interest in smartphone video production classes. They present a lot of unique challenges because everyone's smartphone is a little bit different, or there are, you know, hundreds of models of smartphones, but we're right now in the early stages of developing a smartphone video class that would consist of a number of trainings for different specific shoot types, or you know, event shooting, oral history recording, things like that, and then also have those trainings accompanied with equipment kits that are specifically for smartphones. So microphones that work with smartphones, lavalier microphones, location microphones, tripods for smartphones that go right on a tabletop, or even a regular size tripod, stabilizers so you can walk with it and get smooth video, things like that. Because even though a lot of people are turning toward Facebook and YouTube and different web providers for video content, we still think that public access has a really, really useful function in the community, which is to train people in media, in media generation, and how to produce their own media. And we've never lived in a time when more people had video cameras. In this region, over 80% of people have smartphones, and almost every smartphone is a functional video camera, a pretty good video camera. So we see that as one of the bridges to kind of get people more interested in public media, and really produce some valuable content for our channel, because we see a huge potential for oral histories, or for, you know, mini documentaries about different local issues that people could just film on their own cameras and then submit to us, and we could help them along the way through support in all the phases of production. We also want to have improved volunteer communications. We want to ensure that people that come in feel supported and come back to us. We want to really follow up with people that have regular shows in order to make them feel supported. And we really want to have a robust presence or robust outreach program so that we can have a presence in the community to really encourage more people to use our services. And we're also focused on doing some more topic-based trainings, like I said, with the video production or the smartphone video production courses. We want to also have trainings in how to film landscapes, trainings in how to film a speaker at a table, or oral histories, things that are more topic-based. We see it as an opportunity for getting people interested as well. So we really think that public media is an important service that you help provide to the community, and we really appreciate the opportunity to work for you and for your constituents. And thank you for letting me tell you a little bit about what we do.
Thank you, Matt. We really appreciate you coming out here to go through some of what Leah does. Do any board members have any questions for Matt? I think, I know, Glenn, you remember the old Cherry Capital days, and I think Leah, since it, I think, started in about 2009, I think it was, mm-hmm. housing this, and I think it found a good home with Leah. So,
absolutely.
And they'll in the next couple months, you'll have come to you as we've redone our charter franchise agreement. They're looking at the agreement as well, changing the terminology on that. You know, before things were at 30 cents per user, and based on that, and now we've moved to it being a percentage, all based on a percentage. So they're looking at changing their contract to adjust to that too. So you'll have that come before you in the next couple of months, I would say, you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
by early
June.
Summer. Yeah, June is what we're... Mm-hmm. And we'll meet before then, I'm sure. Right. We've met now two times with the clerks this year just to go over some of those.
Right.
Some of the numbers and...
Right, and we're sharing feedback with you. Beth and I have discussed a few things. The city's been discussing things, and what the hope is that we'll all come back with a unified agreement that's going to be the best for all entities. So.
Yeah,
And it's been a pretty fair thing that they've wanted to change it to. I've run it in the same Excel program that I did the franchise agreement, and it's pretty negligible one way or the other. Mm-hmm.
We're not looking to get more funding. We feel good with the amount of funding that we have right now. We're able to provide all the services necessary to the community. We always see room for improvement, but we think we can do those things without getting extra funds.
Good. Well, thank you so much, Matt. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
You too. See if I can disconnect this without breaking it.
Okay. We have next on our agenda the community police officers, Preston Taylor and Matt McKinley, are both here. Come on up. Why don't you guys take a seat at the table while he's disconnecting his computer there. And they are so nice to be here on their days off.
We're foolish enough to forget to schedule ourselves for the meeting, so sorry.
And they're both dressed in black, and they're both sporting the same haircut there. How about that?
Testifying in court.
Let the questioning begin.
You guys go right ahead. You let us know what you'd like us to know about the CPO program here in East Bay.
You go, buddy.
As you guys know, Preston and I kind of had a gentleman's agreement at the beginning of our working together in East Bay that he would tackle the majority of the hotel problems and I would tackle the majority of the school problems as much as we could, kind of have our own specialties there. That being said, after the Florida shooting, I felt like I should be paying rent in some of these schools because I was there so often. We had some students at some of the schools that were making a lot of jokes about it. We had to actually do an assembly at one of the schools, Grand Traverse Academy, to talk to the students about how serious we take those sorts of threats and comments and jokes. And since that assembly, we've only had one other student who is kind of a frequent flyer as of late that we had to deal with since then. So that kind of helped the problems go away. But it's been pretty busy. It seems like every day I'm at East, just about every single day there, Grand Traverse Academy for something, nothing too huge. You know, usually just some disorderly students, some kids who are having some issues. But the thing I'm most proud of right now, over Thanksgiving, I was at Cherry Knoll Elementary, and I was asking about some of the needs that the school had, and they told me that there were some kids there that didn't have underwear. And I thought, underwear? I can't believe you would actually need underwear in an elementary school, but apparently there's families out there that don't regularly wash their children's clothes, and they wear the same underwear over and over again to the point that they get dirty and they start to stink, and they have to hand this underwear out, and it has to be new. They can't have used underwear. So that kind of touched me, and I did a Facebook post and just got a ton of donations. You guys helped me with a lot of it, too. And we eradicated the underwear need. So that was pretty neat, but I thought there's something more that we can do here. So through our Deputy Sheriff's Association union, we're in the process of getting it all taken care of right now. We're striving to be the resource provider for all the students' needs outside of the classroom. So if you have a kid that just doesn't have a place to sleep, maybe they don't have a bed. We just got a bed for a kid that was sleeping on the floor. Another social worker called and said there was a student that couldn't see the board, needed glasses. So when I'm doing this all through social media, through our Facebook page, we're going to have a Deputy Sheriff's Association Facebook page where through our nonprofit status, businesses can donate their services and citizens can donate monetarily. So what we'll do is, as we have needs arise, I've been working again with the social workers and counselors in Kingsley and TCAP schools, and as they tell us what their needs are, we go on our Facebook page and we say, hey, this is what we have. We have these students that need this sort of thing. And then our community all gets together and we work as a big unit to provide resources for these kids to hopefully keep them in school. Statistically speaking, every kid that graduates is one less person that we'll be dealing with in law enforcement. If they drop out of school, the chances of them getting into the criminal justice system increases exponentially. So I'm very proud of that. I'm looking forward to that taking off here. It should be ready to go full force here by next school year. I even had a local storage unit company donate a 10x20 storage unit for some of these extra belongings, furniture and refrigerators and things like that we're getting people donating for families. So we'll have a place to keep it. And hopefully I'll be able to find some people, maybe some retired folks that wouldn't mind volunteering time to do the running back and forth. Right now we're doing it on our off time. So it'd be nice to have somebody that would just do the running for us.
That's awesome.
That's it.
Your turn.
He glossed over that, and I'm not going to spend too much time on that because that's his thing. But I didn't know this, but on Fridays, the schools send kids home with groceries so they make it through the weekend. They don't have enough food. And this guy has really stepped up to the plate and gotten a lot of donations. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, what a wonderful thing for that community outreach from law enforcement and that connection.
Absolutely.
And just eyeglasses the other day. This kid didn't have eyeglasses. Couldn't afford them. So.
And we got those in 30 minutes.
We had glasses. Pretty amazing.
With an eye exam, 30 minutes.
That's so cool. Kudos to Matt on that. On the hotels, I don't know. I lost in that gentleman's agreement, agreeing to take on the hotels. I went to the latest hospitality meeting they had, where all the not just hotels, but other department heads or heads of businesses come together. But I went to that meeting, did a brief speech there, and just, hey, this is me again, and making sure that they know who I am and how to get in touch with me. I also went to every hotel again in the month of March to update contact information and touch base with management. As luck would have it, Catherine, who's the head of the hospitality thing, did a four-hour personal safety class with me, so she knows me quite well now by face, and we've exchanged phone numbers. We did have one hotel that we had a bit of a prostitution issue with in the February, March, and I understand that those individuals are gone, some of which were taken out of the area because of warrants in a different jurisdiction, which is wonderful. We don't want them here if that's the business they're doing. Perception is reality, and you want to be proud of your CPOs. I understand I'm getting a new Dodge Charger next month. Mm-hmm. So my Sanford and Son Crown Victoria will be going down the road, hopefully in the next 60 days. And Matthew is possibly on that list as well, so you might have two fancy cars. Once the car is in and all the equipment is outfitted, I had Beth frequently tries to bribe me with lunches at McDonald's, and we met over the Easter holiday weekend. And once that car is outfitted and we see what it's going to look like, I would like to have some type of carrier for the fantastic bicycle you guys bought for Matt and I, so that it's a little more mobile to go with me rather than just being stored. Chief Parker's been gracious in letting us keep it in his facilities, but it'd be nice to have it with me. On that note, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Grand Traverse County Sheriff's Office owns a dirt bike, a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. And Matthew's not big enough to handle that motorcycle. So I volunteered to, I talked with the sheriff. I do have a cycle endorsement as well, and we do have some trails and things. And I don't know mm-hmm. that we have a need for me to be out there very often, but it's nice to know that we have access if needed. And I understand, and this is according to the sheriff, and I am no ORV guy, but he said there was a change to the law, or there's going to be a change to the law where we would see more ORV traffic uh-huh. in our township. And if that does become an issue and citizens start complaining, we have an avenue of reaching some of those trails in a law enforcement capacity. Someone had mentioned earlier the user-friendliness of Grand Traverse County Road Commission. I had worked with them, because I haven't seen you guys, just in the last 6 to 8 months, some signage issue on Wemple Road, which was corrected immediately, speed study on High Lake Road. They installed a post for us on Black Bark Road so we could hang our speed mm-hmm. Measuring device. And then I can't remember his name, but he's in the East Bay area. And I had a complaint on Thousand Oaks regarding some stakes that were put up and snowmobilers had issues, and texting back and forth with County Roads, and that was corrected within the hour.
Wow.
So thank you. Not necessarily always the case in the past, so that's wonderful. And that's pretty much what I've been up to.
Okay, well, first of all, you know, maybe it's just because since I've been supervisor, worked with these two. And I know that we've been really fortunate with CPOs in the past, but mm-hmm. these two CPOs fit East Bay Township like a glove. I mean, we're very lucky. First of all, when you go to get coffee on a Saturday morning at McDonald's, you don't feel any safer than with Preston Taylor with you. I can tell you that for sure. But got to talk with him about things, what resources would provide would be useful, and he mentioned that bike rack, which we'll take a look at, and mentioned the ORV, which I think is fantastic, using a resource that the Sheriff's Department already has to get into the township in a different manner. You know, he'll be using the bike for just at the Board of Review. We heard from two different people who were before the Board of Review who live abutting commercial areas and the TART trail about issues, you know, with activity on that TART trail. You know, we like to think of it's all, you know, people biking and walking their dogs. And, of course, there's other things that go on that TART trail. So that bike that we were able to fund through those fees that we receive is able to put them on the TART trail in a different mode of transportation and address those issues that, like, the people of the Board of Review had concerns on. So that's terrific. I can't imagine having anybody better to address drugs and prostitution on Munson than a six-foot, I'm not sure how tall, six-foot-five, you know, guy addressing, you know, those issues. And then we are incredibly fortunate in this time and day to have Matt McKinley, an experienced school liaison officer from West Middle School, with East Bay Township. We have six schools in our township, as you guys know. The trends these days, and my personal opinion is you don't want to be reactive to things just because of, you know, the snippet on the news. But it's my opinion that, you know, when we want to deal with important issues that are troubling our society and our community, we start with the kids. And Matt is exceptional at dealing with kids and families. And so I think I'm very, very happy with the relationship that he's had with the schools. We're going to continue to build on that. Because that is where we can really address things. And I'm not just talking about, you know, as horrible as they are, I'm not only speaking about threats. I'm also talking about if you look at the instance and what kids are really vulnerable to, statistically, they're actually more vulnerable to depression, suicide, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, sexual abuse, those types of things. And these are the things that we have officers, kids become comfortable and tell the officer about that, and you're able to address it. So I'm sorry to kind of get off on that, but I do want to mention that because that's a specialty of Matt's, and we're fortunate to be able to leverage that in the township. So the last thing I'll mention is just that these two work so well together as well. They really are cognizant of each other's strengths and very positive about each other and the work that they do and supportive of each other. And I think that that's also a really fortunate thing to have here. So, but I don't mean to take up that time. I just wanted to let you know what I see when I see them come in, when I've had contact with them. Any questions?
I have a comment, and this might sound like a criticism, but I think it's actually the opposite. I was talking to my daughter the other day, and she's at Cortade Elementary School, and she goes, "Where's Officer McKinley? I haven't seen him in a while." And I'm like, you know, wait, that's a good thing, because you're used to him being there, and now that, you know, he's not there as much for whatever reason, you notice it. So it might sound like a criticism, but I don't really think it is.
The reason I haven't been there as much in the morning is because I can't get my patrol car at my driveway because I don't have a four-wheel drive charger. I'm at the fire station, so now that the snow is gone, I'll be there tomorrow morning.
Well, I just want to make sure, though, as much as we appreciate and encourage you, we're not running down to talk to the sheriff about all those accolades, because we don't want him to move you guys. We want you to stay here.
Actually, he was in the other day, and I said to him, "Sheriff, I just want to tell you, really like the CPOs that we have placed at East Bay." And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "Talk to Acme, Garfield. Everybody likes their CPOs. We have great CPOs." I'm like, "Okay, great, yeah, but keep ours two here." I said, "That's great, but keep our two here."
No change.
Yep, absolutely.
Real quick, I forgot to add this. Real quick, I know you guys have been here long enough.
on the bikes that we were blessed to get from you, we didn't get to use them much last year because Matt and I are training officers. I was assigned four people to train, and that's a month-long endeavor, one person. So for 4 months, I was training, and I couldn't put them on the back of my bike.
We can get you a carrier.
We are up to snuff. We're full capacity. We have no one in training. So as soon as the snow decides to leave, which should be around mid-July, mm-hmm. I plan on busting out the bike actively. Just the other day, I rolled through the back of a hotel. I won't say which one. Caught two people partaking in drugs in a car. And that's in a full-size Crown Vic. Imagine what I could do on a bicycle. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't see me coming. So I'm looking forward to that being available. So thank you again for that.
They'd see you coming in.
Yeah, with camouflage.
You know, that is important because I know last summer we sent out something about the bikes and the CPOs having bikes. And I did get a phone call, and that's like, why are you buying these guys bikes? I mean, the thing is, that I told them, it is not for them to go out and take a leisurely stroll. It's really to get them in the community in a different venue. It also, you know, allows them to approach hotels less conspicuously than in a Crown Vic or, you know, and
a charger.
And they were like, oh, I never thought about it that way. So that's, you know, that's a lot of the basis behind what they do. And then there is also the part where the more traditional activities on the charge trail, it is good to see them, mm-hmm. and, you know, you feel confident about that.
I've heard of a lot of problems on the TART trail mm-hmm. that, you know, made it so people weren't using it. So to see, you know, officers randomly on the trail is going to mm-hmm. restore it to what it's supposed to be for.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, guys. Okay, next on our agenda, we have Pat Parker with Grand Traverse Metro. Hi, Pat. How are you? And we have a couple things with Pat. We've got the annual report, and then we've got the Station 9 renovation.
I, too, would echo the comments on these two deputies. They're awesome. And we're actually going to miss those two bicycles at the Metro office because it's kind of our rapid response vehicle when you have a Dairy Queen fix. Well, just real quickly, it's now April, and I'm bringing you our 2017 annual report, which probably some of you have had a chance to look at, but just going to go over some of the quick highlights. I know it's been a long meeting so far, but I do want to reach out and recognize Chief Hanna on the front of our annual report. What a great mentor, and it was an honor to serve under him. 50 years in the fire service, passed away this year, and a lot of you were at that wedding, or funeral, excuse me. On page 4 is my welcome message from the chief. We ran 4,737 calls last year, which is about a 3% increase, and as it's been in the years past, right around 70-71% of all of our calls are medical. Some highlights this year was we put a new squad out at Station 12 on Silver Lake Road. We spent the year preparing for our ISO eval, and that's coming this summer in July. We're very excited about the opportunity to go from a 5 in the hydrogen area to a 3 is our goal, and in the non-hydrogen area, hopefully go from a 6 to a 5. Number 3 I have on there, recruitment and retention has been tough, and I put it on there as a positive because we did end up the year with a positive employees. And it's hard to get these young people and get them to go into training and then to keep them. We can all get all the training about millennials and iGens or whatever you want to call them. By the way, they hate being called that. But, you know, we've been getting a lot of training lately on you know, how they think and react. And, you know, big part of the fire service right now are ladies. And, you know, we trying to find a way to get more ladies into the fire service, and the recruit class right now at the regional training centers, half of a 20 person class are ladies, so kind of exciting. Just to maybe turn the page to page 7, 8, 9, just gives us the statistics in there of incidents per year, what type, the hours of day in the bottom of page 8, it usually ramps up about 7 o'clock in the morning, ramps back down about 7 o'clock at night. Incidents by station, of course, Station 11 on Veterans Drive is our busiest, followed by Station 12, followed by Station 1 over the hill here, Station 8 and Station 9. Of all of our incidents, 71% of them are in Garfield, 18% in East Bay, and 11% in Acme. And a big part of Garfield's are the fact that they have so many extended care facilities and adult foster care homes. And if you read the Record Eagle a couple of weeks ago, great statistics in there about how older population are here to stay and how they're going to affect this region's health care, jobs, housing. And we're seeing that because of the 71% of our calls we go on, I think about 60% of those of that 71% are people over the age of 65. So they are taking up a lot of resources, and they're here to stay. They're not going to Florida in the wintertime, and they're using our health care system and jobs and housing and all that. You can see on page 11, Chief Apostle talks a little bit about our operations and a lot of the successes of our Bay Area Tech Rescue, which is a collaboration between us, Traverse City, and I believe Elmwood Township on the technical rescue. We had three people complete their instructor coordinator course this year, Nick Lemkuhl, Spencer Scanlon, Jared Barber. We're excited to have those people around. They can now teach continuing education credits for our medical training. This was a year of getting our arms around our vehicle maintenance, and our fleet is, I think the average is 15 years old, and it's starting to show its age a little bit. And, you know, a new fire truck's $550,000 to $600,000, so it isn't just something you run out and get every year. And then in the report, all of our station captains kind of get a little personal with the readers and talk about all the great things happening at their stations. On page 18, then Chief Belcher gets into the Fire Prevention Bureau. And, of course, the highlight of the Fire Prevention Bureau, of course, is our fire and life safety educator, Jen Ritter. She works awfully hard at that, and she's really the face of the department out there in the public. We really have great response from her programs. One of the things that she did this year, she actually reached out to businesses and industry. And one of the things that we were going on a lot of were slips and falls at adult foster care homes. And so we actually went in and trained these homes on how to get these people up themselves. And so our numbers have gone down. She's also been out in industry teaching them fire extinguisher training. We actually have a live fire extinguisher simulator. And she's been getting in safety meetings at a lot of businesses in our three townships. Of course, the Youth Fire Center program, thankfully we don't have a lot of people in there, but if we do get a young person that has started a fire, we want to get a hold of that person right away and get a hold of them and get that behavior straightened around. We're really proud on the bottom of page 24 is our Safe Neighborhood program, where if you do not have a working smoke alarm in your home, we'll bring one, we'll provide it, we'll install it. We don't just hand them out, we actually install it. We want to make sure that they're put in properly, and that handing somebody a smoke alarm, a lot of times they just go sit on the shelf. You can see the inspection numbers on the bottom of page 25. We made 246 inspections in Acme, 247 in East Bay, and 763 in Garfield. Garfield has a lot of little mom-and-pop businesses, and that's one of the reasons that their numbers are up. On bottom of page 27, you can see that our largest loss in 27 was a large agricultural barn with a $275,000 loss. Unfortunately, that was the barn at 4 Mile in Hammond. Sorry to see that old barn go, but I see he's already put up a new one, which is awfully good to see. And really, the rest of our annual report just, you know, shows the things we do, from the 9/11 memorial to Toys for Tots to child safety seat inspections. And a lot of our officers and firefighters have gone out and got some professional credentialing, as well as master's degrees and bachelor's degrees, so we're all awfully excited about that. So unless anyone has any questions, that's kind of, in a nutshell, our annual report. It's on our website at gtmetrofire.org, and you're welcome to download it. And to people in the viewing public, we'd love to have you look at it.
And Pat, that program that you mentioned about the fire alarms, that has conclusively saved lives, have you found?
It has, yes. And we had a fire on Potter Road in November, and a family of four was awakened and got out because the smoke alarms went off. And we're in the hallway of that, and we're looking up, and Chief Belcher said, you know, that looks like one of our smoke alarms. And we have all of our alarms on our cell phones. So we pulled up the cell phone, pulled it up, and we actually installed two alarms in that home in 2015. So
wow.
Hard to quantify, public education efforts. You just don't know, getting your arms around those statistics. Are we making a difference or not? And, you know, that's one that we truly can say did.
Yeah. Mindy, did you have a question?
I have just the challenge coins.
Uh-huh.
Can you just tell me something about those?
Sure. Well, challenge coins are kind of a military thing. It's kind of a camaraderie. Usually when you're in a bar and you don't have your challenge coin, you have to buy first round. But for us, it's kind of it's like an ownership. Like you're part of the department, and you only get your challenge coin when you're a regular member. I mean, you've gone through the training. You're actually part of the team, and it's kind of a memento you leave in your pocket. And, of course, ours has our Latin on there, omnes sito domus, which means we all go home. It's kind of a reminder for people to operate safely, go home to your loved ones.
Okay.
So
it was nice, the first ones that you received. Didn't they have their number on
them?
Yeah,
we ordered 100 with our badge numbers on it, so it's a real keepsake. So it's kind of a military thing, but fire service has picked up on it.
Any other questions on the annual report? No, thanks,
great,
Pat.
Great.
We'll move on to the Station 9 renovation.
Yeah, just real quickly before we get into that, pancake breakfast, May 6th. Love to have you all there, Station 9. The board, thankfully, gave us the opportunity to hire three more full-time people. We're having just a tough time staffing. And with all the fire departments in the area now, hiring, we want to make sure that a lot of our young people that have been with us for a while aren't going to leave us and go to some of these other fire departments. Rural is no longer as of April 1st, and we're seeing an increase of wanting us to enter into mutual aid agreements with these townships. And the term mutual aid means that, you know, we're going to give you aid, you're going to give us aid. And in a lot of the cases, they don't have a lot to offer us yet. And so, you know, if we're going to give aid to some of these people, we're going to, unfortunately, send them an invoice as well until the time comes where it can be truly reciprocal. Probably two mutual aid partners that we really can bring value to each other would be the city and Blair. And so our board has given me the leeway to not send them bills initially, but to see how it kind of flushes out over the year, and probably the numbers will be so close we give them the same amount of aid as they give us. With that, the deputy's comments about active shooter, active assailants, whatever you want to call it, we're taking that very, very seriously in the fire and EMS side of things, in that a lot of these people that have been shot are dying from gunshot wounds. They're bleeding to death. And so if we can get rescue task forces in there quick enough to put tourniquets, put quick clot, those types of things, we think we can save more people. And so we're actually working with the Grand Traverse Sheriff's Department on an upcoming training, and where we will go into the hot zone, fire and EMS, with their protection. They'll send a team of people in to go after the bad people, and then there'll be another team outside to take us in. So we want to try to get people out and into definitive care as quick as we can. So there's some big training on that. But it's not that it's in the forefront of everybody right now, and we've been talking about it for years, but we're trying to formalize it and actually have standard operating guidelines on how we're going to operate. So other than that, that's it.
Let's see. I just wanted to mention, you were talking about mutual aid, and I wanted the board to know. I think it was Geez, Pat, was it about a year and a half or 2 years ago we started to charge for mutual aid?
Right.
So that was something that we looked at, and it was really coincided with the beginning of the degradation of rural and kind of seeing that start to pull apart. So that's something that we continue to talk about. Once we decided to charge for it, now we talk about, you know.
Well, we want to be neighborly, yeah, just like everybody, but when you all have made the investment in your fire department at 2.35 mils, that, you know, you want a level of readiness, and there's a ready-to-serve fee, and you guys have paid that. And so often we hear, well, Metro staff, just send them. And these other communities maybe can't afford the same protection level, but their citizens expect it. So we'll be there. But every time we go on a call to another township outside our area, our whole system moves. If, you know, if we go into a department on the west side, then the east kind of moves west, or vice versa. And it's expensive to call people in and to man up stations. So 26% of the time, Metro is out on two calls at the same time. So, you know, we're getting busy.
Okay, the other thing that we have on the agenda under Metro was the Station 9 renovation. And in your board packet is the background and recommendation that was presented to Metro at their last board meeting. Also, the minutes from that meeting, so you could see the motions that were passed, and then the current lease agreement that East Bay Township has with Grand Traverse Metro. Pat, do you want to just briefly talk about, you know, why there is a need for the Station 9 renovation?
Sure.
And then what we're, you know, looking at doing?
Well, I thought I could give you just a quick little timeline here. In 1999, East Bay Township put an additional office on Station 9, and that was for fire, EMS, and sheriff, so they would have an office to conduct business. In 2008, East Bay Township and Metro entered into a lease agreement giving Metro the premises at 110 High Lake Road. Metro was to bear the expenses. The lease did say that East Bay was to be responsible for exterior repairs and any repairs requiring capital improvements. However, the other leases in Acme and Garfield stated that Metro would pay for all of those. And in operating the lease, Metro pretty much paid the repair and capital improvements, with the exception of some things that East Bay paid, like carpeting and the share of the phone system and that. So even though the lease said one thing, Metro operated East Bay Township the same as they did in Acme and Garfield. Due to reduced availability of responders at Station 9, Metro decided to institute a residency program where we would actually put a firefighter in bed. In this case, there were no ladies, so a couple of guys that went there, and actually their address was Station 9. They lived there. They moved their things into there. And the nice part about that was is we had a firefighter living there that when there was a call, they could go. They didn't have to go on every call. We said they had to at least go on, I believe it was 60 hours a month. But it was great for young people that wanted to save some money. What we did then is we moved the sheriff deputies out of their office, moved them onto the other side with fire and EMS, and we put two bunk beds in there. In 2015 and 2016, East Bay EMS started sleeping an employee there at Station 9 on a sporadic basis, and Tim and his budget trying to give better service, we pretty much had someone in bed there every night. In August of 26th, the fire marshal deemed the sleeping quarters was a code violation. Primarily that was because there was no firewall and there were no exit windows. So Metro and East Bay EMS both quit sleeping at Station 9, and East Bay was sending a rig and a medic down to Station 1 over the hill here for the overnight. So in 2016, we met with our architect. We came up with a plan. We bid it out with the Traverse City Builders Exchange, and we only received one bid back, and that was for $46,009. I was coming to your March board meeting, and I just told Beth, please take it off the agenda because it's over our budget. We had budgeted about $30,000 for that project. So, all along we were talking about this project, and Glenn and I were having conversations, Tim and I were having conversations that, we potentially would share the cost. No proposal ever came to your board meeting, no proposal ever came to the Metro board meeting, but we kind of went forward thinking we were going to split the cost of this. In 2017, we finally found another builder that bid on this, and it was Greg Riggs from Riggs Construction. He had done some insurance work at Station 9, did a great job. So in September 27th, Metro received a resolution from East Bay Township requesting that Metro reinstate the residency program and to have Metro budget for dorm renovations in 2018. And in that same resolution, it resolves that if Metro had any funding requests, to bring it to the township as soon as possible. And in December 2017, East Bay and Metro entered into a new lease, which is in your packets, that does require Metro to pay all repairs and capital expenditures. So in January this year, Riggs Construction did bid it at $45,100, which is slightly under the original bid, but I don't know anywhere else or find anybody that's going to bid on this. So I brought it to the Metro Board on March the 27th, and the board agreed to enter into an agreement with Riggs Construction in the amount of $45,100 for the Station 9 renovation in accordance with the lease agreement. And then a second motion was made at that meeting, which was for Metro to ask East Bay Township to pay 50% of the renovation project per the chief's recommendation. So that kind of gives you a little timeline from the time we built that to the residency program. We have a need for that. We have a lot of young people right now that probably would stay at Station 9. It would be nice if East Bay Ambulance didn't have to every night grab the rig and go down to Station 1. They could just stay housed right there. So my recommendation to the board was that we enter into agreement with Riggs Construction. I have since talked to him. He still can do the project. Probably wouldn't start until later this spring. And that my recommendation to the board is that East Bay pay half of it. I don't have money in my budget to pay the whole $45,100. I do have money in the budget that I could pay for half. Other than that is if you all don't agree to that tonight, then I would have to go back and make a budget resolution and find the money probably out of fund balance or out of the public improvement fund to do that. So I'm here tonight to ask if you would consider participating in this project. Even though the lease does say that Metro is to bear all the capital expenditures and repairs and improvements.
Okay. Thank you, Pat. Right. Just to go back on that timeline, I want to mention, I think it was, and I think you probably had in there, it was summer 2016, late summer, maybe early fall, when kind of the need for the renovation was brought to...
I've got copies of that timeline if anybody wants.
Yeah.
September 2016?
Metro. Yeah. To Metro, as far as there was an issue with the facilities, they're not passing our own. Thank you so much.
Do you have one that Andrea can have as well? Or?
And then through that next year in 2017 is when, because there was some board members with an issue with that station renovation, it became kind of an issue regarding the lease. And so that's when we went through the renegotiation of the lease. Pat mentions the resolution, and that, if you recall, is a resolution that we passed in response to Station 9 not being included in Metro's budget at that time. It wasn't in Metro's budget. It ended up being included in the verbiage of Metro's budget, but not in the numbers. And so we passed that resolution asking for them to, make that a priority in getting that done. So, and Pat's pretty much covered the rest. The only other thing I would note is that in the current lease, under number 6, it does say that if Metro desires to make any structural alterations, improvements, or additions, they must receive East Bay's written consent. prior to any of those alterations. So one, I would like for this board to pass a motion that we would, and this is regardless of any funding, but just that we would approve them to do, to undertake that renovation. So any board members have any questions or comments?
I have a couple.
Sure.
I guess my first one is, now that the three leases are consistent with one another, if East Bay chooses to partner with the cost, how does that affect the other two lease agreements? Is that something that we legally have to know about? Or because East Bay is, would, I'm just putting words out there, if East Bay does a gentleman's agreement and partners in the cost, it doesn't affect the other two leases. I mean, because we've got a real big undertaking going on over at Garfield with some structural deficiencies. Are they then going to be asked to partner with that, or is ACME going to be asked to partner more thoroughly with their quarters? I mean, how has anyone looked at that part of it?
I would, you know, I'll just go ahead and, because I'm a board member there, and Glenn, you can chime in. Pat, please chime in. I think that those are good and relevant questions. I'm not an attorney, as you know, but I would, my guess would be that, you know, what we choose to do here at East Bay Township doesn't legally affect their lease. However, it might impact what board members have as an expectation of those townships, right? You know, if I, you know, well, I don't.
Well, you
know,
understand why I'm asking the question.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems. Either way, I want to see the dorms happen, whether we partner or we say Metro find a way in fund balance or some other way to offset it. I just. Setting the precedence of if East Bay partners, how does that affect the other two agreements?
And understand, too, that the motions that were from the Metro, right now, as it stands, Metro has approved doing the entire renovation at their expense. So, as Pat mentions, if we don't partner, they will have to just do, they will have to do a budget adjustment and make an allocation for that. And then if they we choose to partner, then they would, you know, adjust that accordingly. Glenn?
I'm going to try to be short and sweet here. Originally, when Metro and I talked, it was Metro had been fixing stuff that if you dig the lease out, it wasn't their responsibility to fix. But, you know, we were working together. Well, the board spent, what, a year of nothing but real bitter meetings over Metro paying for some blacktop that they shouldn't have had to pay for. That's what got us to the new agreement. And all the new agreements are pretty well the same, and it does state in there that any improvements is paid by Metro. It's a sad situation that we've got to now, and maybe it's the way life is, that you can't have really friendly handshake agreements anymore. Because when we dealt with this, I come away with the idea originally I thought it was the best thing that could happen, we could join forces. But after going through over a year of listening to these meetings, setting through them, get browbeat, the agreement states what it states. And I think if we move away from that, we're going to be in the same boat we were when it came out with the big fight or the big disagreement, whatever you want to call it.
So can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay, so in my understanding of the written motion from the Metro Board, this is to be a priority for 2018 regardless of how the funding is incurred, correct?
It's agreed to for 2018. The motion was that Grand Traverse Metro enter into the agreement with Riggs Construction the amount of $45,100 for the Station 9 renovation in accordance with the lease agreement with Metro and East Bay Township. So that motion approves the contract, the full construction amount, and then if it's in accordance with the lease agreement, then that would be Metro financing that. And the board knows that. When we did that motion, you correct me if I'm wrong, please, but that first motion was, we're going to do this regardless. And then the second motion was, okay, Metro is welcome to ask East Bay Township if they choose to partner with it. I guess the way I look at this, one of the things besides agreeing with Glenn's comments, if we choose to pay half of it, we are unduly burdening the East Bay Township residents. They pay into Metro. These lease agreements are all set up to be equal. East Bay EMS 9A is there no more so than North Flight is in the other stations. North Flight exists in Station 11, 12, 8. So there's no difference. That was because that was always the connotation. Well, we have East Bay 9A there. East Bay 9A is no different than North Flight being there.
The only thing I can say is I do have to bring a budget amendment, so that potentially might not pass, but I don't know where that would go. Because right now I don't have money in the budget to do this project. But my recommendation was half. So I knew I was going to come here. Whatever happens here, then I will come back. It's next week already with a budget amendment.
So, you know, that is true. Technically, that is true. I would find it odd, though, if a board were to pass a motion unanimously and then they didn't follow up with the amendment to do what they originally put in the motion. That would be rather odd. For example, we just chose to hire 3 full-time employees, and that will take a budget adjustment, too. You'll have to switch money from part-time personnel to full-time personnel. And so, you know, that will take one, too. So those things happen when you make decisions. Sure.
Now, I'm inclined to honor the gentleman's agreement and make sure that this project gets done. I want to make sure that it doesn't stall. It doesn't get hung up with board spitter spatter with the three. I don't imagine it would, but in my opinion, in good faith, when we first made the discussions, it was that East Bay would partner. However way we chose to, whether it's out of the ambulance fund or the general fund, that we would partner to make sure that our EMS staff could be bedded down and the residency program could be reestablished. We've been great partners in the past. I know we'll continue to be great partners, and I would certainly not want to spat at the Metro Authority board level, delay it any longer. So I would make a motion to move forward with the dorms with Riggs Construction at $45,100 to be constructed in 2018, and to partner with Metro for half of the cost to do so.
Support.
Okay. Any further discussion? I would add to that the gentleman's agreement took place for all of 3 months. That was brought to Metro's board in August or September of 2016. It was clarified in the minutes of like October, November, December, later that fall, that this had never been brought to East Bay Township. Never. This was discussion between some administrators. That bound this board, not an ounce. And the other thing is I would say that this, unduly rests the the renovation of the station on East Bay Township residents. You are taxing them above and beyond where they should be. Just paying into Metro should do this renovation, as it's going to be doing Station 8, as it's going to be doing Station 11, with $300,000 in improvements that are dormitories, workout stations, and improvement of a garage floor. So by, you know, adding in our own fund balance, we are taking money from an ambulance that may very well go ALS later this year or next year. And again, making the East Bay funds, making the East Bay residents pay a disproportional amount for improvements that are entitled to them through Metro. And again, I would find it highly unlikely that anything would get held up. Again, I've heard this, you know, well, will we have the money or won't we? Literally, the month before this, on the agenda, with no background information, was please let us hire 3 full-time employees. Not one thing was included in the packet that included money. Nothing. So something that after this year was going to cost us $15,000, next year was going to cost us $60,000 to $70,000, plus other years. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have hired them. We should. But that was not even a discussion. And now we're having trouble coming up with $22,000.
I understand.
So if any other further discussion? Okay, Ann, we'll do roll call vote.
Forte.
Yes.
Merrill.
Yes.
Walters.
No.
Bartlett.
No.
Lyle.
No.
And Friend.
No.
Motion dies.
Motion to...
thank you for your consideration.
Well, hold on, Pat. We've got another motion for you. Motion to allow Metro to make the structural alterations and allow East Bay Township to give written prior consent.
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Oh, I'll support it. Motion made and supported.
Okay. Who made it?
Mindy made it. Beth supported.
And that was, again, for the prior consent for the reconstruction for Station 9. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed by no? Okay. Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. Hi, Tim. How are you? You are the most patient man in the room.
Tim Newton, East Bay Ambulance. Kind of my little quarterly report from January to April 9th of 2018. So as of April 7th, East Bay Ambulance ran a total of 138 calls for service, and actually as of 10 minutes ago, we've added some calls, so we're at 144. 25 of those calls were negative transports. We did 4 fire standbys in East Bay Township. 109 of those calls were transported to Munson Medical Center. 54 of those required advanced life support. For most of our aspects of our winter, I would have to say our call volume's a little bit down, at least the acuity of calls right now. Low-key winter, there wasn't that crazy. I mean, obviously winter's catching up to us right now, but we haven't really had that big significant snowstorms that have lasted over a long period of time. So most of our calls for service were for flu-like symptoms, general weakness, malaise, just not feeling right. The advanced life support calls were mainly cardiac events, and a third of those other advanced life supports were traumas. So as of right now, our staffing levels are sufficient. We are still continuing to maintain the 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week coverage. We have one person that usually stays at Station 1 for a quick, fast response. So our call numbers or our time out the door is, 6 to 7 minutes compared to 17 to 20 minutes where it used to be from having a strictly on-call basis. I'd like to throw out there that Darren Mansfield, one of our full-time employees, finally became a paramedic. He passed his test, so he is officially a state-licensed paramedic. So kudos to him. He did a lot of hard work. Also like to say that I passed my state certification, and I am also a paramedic instructor coordinator in the state of Michigan, so probably moving forward for East Bay Township and the 9A ambulance side of it, as of probably I'm going to start taking over more of the continuing education credits and take over more of the training. So kudos to Matt McKinley and PT. They are a very active approach, and stuff that Matt does in the school system is pretty cool. So good for the community, and he, I mean, both those guys are great. So also, on that note, I know we're talking about Stop the Bleed. I've kind of been very active in getting into the school systems myself. I did 8 classes at Career Tech, where I kind of went in there for 4-hour blocks each class, and I did allied health, public safety, and talked about Stop the Bleed. Stop the Bleed is a national campaign that's kind of been powered forward to medical professionals to get out to the layperson, non-med, you know, people that don't have the medical knowledge to recognize the need to stop the bleed. It kind of came about on the approach of Sandy Hook, kind of evolved after the Boston bombing, really made light after Route 91, and it's a big push forward. It doesn't necessarily have to deal with school shootings. It's the recognition that if somebody bleeds out, you can be dead in 35 seconds. You hit a major artery. So we're trying to get out to the public, hey, traumatic accidents, farming accidents, we live in a farming community, household accidents, a lot of different areas where if you nick an artery, you can be dead in 45 seconds. It's the standard person to recognize, hey, we need to stop the bleed. So I've been kind of getting out into these schools and making a big push with that. You know, you can use a tourniquet, you can pack a wound, you can compress, you have to dial 911. So I guess my plea to you is that if any businesses or if anybody wants to attend a class, I'm an instructor, I can put together a class in 24 hours. I would like to get deeper into the business communities right now. Churches are really big into it, and I'm going to hit Grand Traverse Academy. I also have another swing at Career Tech that I have to get out to. So if you have the need or really want, you know, anybody that knows or wants the education, I'd definitely like to get out there and put the word out there. Also, been doing a big hit with drugs. Actually, tonight at Station 9, we were doing a training for, what was it, Chief? The street drugs?
Right.
So I've been doing a big push into these schools with the heroin epidemic, opioids. So it's kind of been a very heartening situation because once you make friends with these kids and once they realize that you're not a bad dude, there's some pretty heartening stories that are going on out there. And it's a bigger problem than I think what we really choose to want to understand. So I'm going to really keep working in on the schools in East Bay. I'm going to hit Central High School, and I've also got a presentation in Kalkaska that I have to give for their high school. So it's a bigger epidemic than what I think we really realize, but these kids, once they get you get to know them, they open up. So it's kind of cool. So as Chief Pat Parker did say, May 6th, pancake breakfast. I would hope that May 5th, I need a lot of help. May 6th, we need a lot of help. So mark your calendars. Let me know if you can help. If you have any other, that's all I have. So
I want to say Tim's certification that he just got required a huge commitment on his part. He traveled downstate every week.
Every Monday night, we went to Oakland. I drove to Oakland. I usually got 10 o'clock on the road, got down there for class. We got down at 11 o'clock and drove back.
So a lot of coffee.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of coffee. A lot of coffee and a lot of junk food. How's that to get us through the time?
Did we have another paramedic as well? Did we have another one pass the paramedic?
Jacob Delapia, yep. He's also a certified paramedic. He's on board with us, so he's a little more active approach right now. He's also a new papa, so little one's been keeping him busy too. So,
okay. Yep. We appreciate your commitment.
Yes, absolutely, and congratulations. That's
thank you
huge.
So much.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Okay, with that, we're at the end of the agenda, but Tracy, I know you had something on the brush drop-off.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind, probably not so much for the public here, but for those watching, we are going to offer the joint effort with the brush drop-off, the county brush drop-off. It will start May 1st and run through June 2nd, so stop into the office Monday through Thursday and pick up your passes.
Is that for 3 yards again?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is it, one trailer load?
3 cubic yards.
It's a regular size pickup truck, yeah. Flat, not piled.
Not mounted. But it's good for, you know, neighbors have gone together. You know, somebody doesn't have a pickup or a trailer, and so one will haul for several neighbors, and they'll turn in all the receipts together. And so it works out really well.
Okay. This is time for a second opportunity for public comment, if anybody from the public would like to address the board. And I think we've outlasted any of the public if we had any from the beginning. It's about 9 o'clock, so I really want to thank you for your latitude in trying this new format. I hope you feel like you got some good information from the different departments and agencies. If there's no other objections, we stand adjourned. Everybody have a good evening and a safe drive home.